Blog Talk Radio.
I always wait for that Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to the Consciousness Shift. I'm Gwen Berry, and in New York, we have Nicole Tomasini. Tonight, our guest is from Casadega, Florida. His name is Victor. Victor Vogens, how do I pronounce your last name correctly, Victor?
Well, it's Vogenitz.
Vogenitz.
Vogenitz. Yep, kind of the way it looks.
Nitz. A spiritualist and medium and a fellow who has a lot to share with us this evening. As usual, we're going to open the show with a little song and also a treat for us. My sister Debbie is with us tonight, too, and she's been to one of Victor's seances. So this is going to be a really fun evening. Let's open it up with an appropriate song from our friend P. Grimm over at Reverb Nation. Victor, I want to welcome you to a consciousness shift. And that's the question that almost every human being walking is always asking, is death the end? And you're qualified to sit with us this evening and explain a little bit about perhaps how people might understand that there is no such thing as death. Is that a good intro for you?
Well, sure. Definitely, and as a spiritualist medium, and I am a what may be referred to as a classically trained medium. Okay, versus someone who says I'm a medium because I'm the seventh son of a seventh son. I mean, because you may have a good physical potential to be a medium. It takes years of training and practice to work on not only all the proper aspects of dealing with spirit, but how to deliver the messages and how to, you have to understand the history of where you come from, you know, to know where you're going to. You have to understand how the old mediums used to work so that you understand how you work.
Well, Victor, can you tell us, can you give us a trip down memory lane, as it were, and tell us, how would an old-fashioned, how would the sister sit down with somebody and begin a seance when this all began to become the fashion so long ago? How did it start out?
Well, before I start, I just want to say hi to Debbie.
Hello, Victor.
How are you doing tonight, Debbie?
I'm doing wonderful. How are you?
Oh, fine. I just we had such an interesting experience when you were there that I think that's going in my book.
Oh, it was amazing. Just amazing. I was telling my sister, you know, I've seen this on the Discovery Channel and seances and seen documentaries, seen the tables, and I've always wanted to do it. And being with you and doing it was beyond my expectations. It was amazing.
Well, you and the other sitters that we had a very unique experience because of the shift of energy and consciousness that took place there. It was very different from what I have with other groups of sitters. So I just wanted you to know what an interesting experience that was. Well, getting back to Gwen's question, originally, seances, you can split, you have to split time. You can say modern spiritualism and old, or what happened beforehand. And in the past, I mean, Native Americans all sat in a circle around the fire. You know, people have been sitting in a circle doing metaphysical things since the beginning of time. The modern spiritualists, they believed in, well, first of all, it was all home development, home circles, because there were no grand cathedrals of modern spiritualism. So it was all done at home. In a developmental circle, and generally in somebody's parlor, that they'd eat lightly and then sit for development in their parlor, and later on, people got to where they had a dedicated space for development, such as a seance room like we have.
And when people, are you still with me, Victor?
Yes.
And so when people would come, what is the difference between the beginning of a seance then and how it's done now? I know that probably it's only subtle differences, but still, I think people find it interesting to understand how you gather together, what you do to prepare the way and all of that, and what it might have been once before.
Well, I always laughingly refer to myself as an old school spiritualist medium. So I have quite an extensive library and collection of books, and I like to read how they did it so that I understand how perhaps to make it work in the most efficient manner for myself. Before I do a seance, I go in and make sure the seance room is clean. I vacuum, I dust, I make sure that everything's... You don't want to commingle your energies in a dirty environment if you can keep from it. Although our ancestors, early spiritualists, used to do seances in Casadega in tents before they built their original buildings. That was Casadega's call, the Southern Casadega Spiritualist Camp Meeting Association, because originally all the mediums from up north, they met in a tent. They pitched tents for the winter down there, and then came spring, they'd go back to to Lilydale, or they'd go to Chesterfield, or they'd go to Etna, Maine, or they'd go to Pennsylvania, wherever their other churches were. So first of all, I make sure that the environment's clean. I smudge it too, so that all the energy is nice and clean, and it's like, you know, writing with a clean slate.
Yeah.
Then
yeah.
I spend about 15 minutes. I work on my table. I make sure that every nut and bolt on that table is tight, every screw's tight. It's a big, large dining table with a platform on it and four large legs. So I make sure that you know, it's. I want everything to be as authentic as possible. So I make sure that, you know, it's not a creaky old table that you're going to touch it and it's going to make noise or it's going to do this or that. Instead, I laughingly say I pre-flight my table. And then I will clean it with wax. You need to take care of your table because you move so much energy through it that the wood can dry out if you're not careful. We're living creatures. Spirit can borrow our energy, ectoplasm, whatever you want to call it, and bring it back to us. But moving energy through that table, unfortunately, they can't return it back to the table because it's not living in the same sense that we are. So you have to make sure that you take care of your tools. Well, then, before we go downstairs, I like to spend some time sitting, explaining to people, you know, what we would like to try to do tonight, what our goals are for the sitting, and give everybody a chance to calm down from the stresses of the day, from the drive over, whatever it might be. Then when we go downstairs, of course, you go through all the traditional steps of protection, your opening prayers, calling for the pure white light of God to protect you, whatever. However you see that to be, you form your circle. There's a couple of visual meditations that you can do to see the energy move and build and see everybody blend their energy together. And then the old-time mediums, they used to ask their doctors and chemists to help blend the energy. They're like part of your band of spirit guides. They'd ask for the doctors and chemists to blend the energy of all the sitters in the room and of all the seances that you've had in that room and all the people that have been there and to a form that can be used for the highest and best for purposes of communication. You get that accomplished, then you ask your doorkeepers to open the doors for communication and make sure only the highest and best energy can come in. You ask your guides. And they call them runners sometimes. What they are is their assistants to perhaps help the consciousness of one of your loved ones who may not be experienced with how this works, to help bring them in a manner that they can clearly, concisely, and accurately and evidentially communicate with the people at the table. And then you just sort of sit in a attitude of expectation. You know, you don't push it. You'll sit and just, okay, now let's give it a few minutes here for the energy to build and see what's going to happen. And of course there is that one scary thing that can happen at seances. You might have to sing, but and we always laughingly say that because the sound of the human voice is also energy, and we'll sing I've been working on the railroad, You Are My Sunshine. But especially some of the older songs from the gay 90s, they used to call it, the late 1890s. When you sing You Are My Sunshine, you're saying words like, nobody knows how much I love you. And that energy of saying, you know, nobody knows how much I love you, how much I miss you, putting that energy, it's sympathetic. It's sympathetic energy, sympathetic rhythm, and it's used to bring the spirits closer to you. And then, you know, from there, anything can happen.
So, Victor, when you're you were explaining about some of the elements of this phenomenon and describing runners, we used to call them gatekeepers. These are, you said, also evidentiary phenomenon. In other words, I'm thinking you mean confirmation that someone who's sitting at the table at the seance that evening is hearing from a loved one, and there's a confirmation of it. Am I correct?
Yes. Well, what we do is, you know, we generally have your gatekeeper or your doorkeeper. They're the ones that watch the doors for communication, and they sort of choose or allow who should come in and who shouldn't, you know, because you only want the highest and best. And then you have, they're kind of like assistants. Sometimes, you know, they used to call, old spiritualists used to call children joy guides, for instance. But actually, some of the mediums I've studied with, I still study with mediums from England and Australia and other countries. A lot of times they see children actually help work with the ectoplasm.
Is that still a large phenomenon? Is children, spirit children that clear the way or bring people to the seance, spirit to the seance?
Well, sometimes children are actually good at bringing in other the spirits of other children that have passed.
Yeah.
Children will also, they're joy guides. You know, in a seance, it's okay to laugh. It's okay to to talk. It's, of course, you're going to keep your conversation on what's happening around you, but it's okay to converse, because as long as your intent and attitude is still focused on communication. We have a 7.5-year-old girl by the name of Sarah Arden, who passed in the house that we live. And we know about her passing because we've talked to a couple of mediums that actually knew the family. She passed in the 70s. We can look the history of the family up. We've got the deed when they owned the house that we lived in. And she, it's not that she's stuck there. She can come and go. You know, the Bible shows you Jacob's ladder, for the angels going up and down the ladder all over the place. But that's actually just meant to show that you can go and come back if you want to. And that house that we own happens to be the last place that she knew on this earth. And if she wants to come back to our house at any time, she can. And she'll come in and do what little tricks a 7.5-year-old child would do. We just had the other night where we had a gentleman with a really large diver's watch with glow-in-the-dark dial on it, and we heard him kind of, and I thought, oh, my goodness, you know, is somebody having an asthma attack or what was going on? And I asked him, was he all right? And he said, my watch. We looked at his watch, and you could see the dial clearly. Then all of a sudden, it was as if somebody put their hand over the dial and then let go and then put their hand over the dial and let go, and we knew that was her. You know, that's something a child will do. She touches people's hair. We know that her mother was a thin-figured woman who had long hair, and that she liked to comb her mother's hair. So we feel that she likes the sense, since she can't feel her own hair anymore, a lot of times she'll touch their hair, just to feel it.
I have a question for you, Victor, and I think people wonder about this. When you are the medium, so you are if you will, in the phenomenon, in the event, you are a kind of a lightning rod, and you expand a lot of energy to draw spirit in and perform or to create the conditions for communication. Am I getting that right?
Yes, it's that's the difference between mental mediumship. I'm not going to disparage mental mediumship because I do it too, but there are not as many physical phenomena mediums because it's work. It's really work. It requires a lot of energy and concentration on the part of the medium. I think of myself as kind of a coordinator. I don't want to say a good example is, let's picture your loved ones are on a rowboat and you're standing on the dock. Well, my job is to pull that boat up to the dock and hold it there while you have the conversation with your loved ones. And then when the energy in the room, the ambient energy from the spirits, when it all finally starts to dissipate, then the boat kind of drifts back. Or another example is I'm like an old-fashioned telephone operator. Somebody wants to talk to you. Well, it's my job to plug it into the board, dial it up, but you've got to answer the phone and have the conversation.
I realize that we're going to, and the last 30 minutes of the show, we're going to take some questions from callers or the chat room. We have one come. Do you want me to read some of the questions that we're getting right now about this?
Well, sure. Go. I'll be glad to answer any question I can.
Krell wants to know, does Victor believe that he is focusing energy from other dimensions, a form of spiritualism, or does he draw energy from the items around him in our dimension? Well, that's good. I like that.
Good question. Yeah.
Well, you have to remember, spiritualism, okay, classic spiritualism was considered to be a science, a philosophy, and a religion.
Yeah.
Now, I sit on what we call the Science and Philosophy Committee, and one of my jobs here. I'm also on the Certification Committee, so if you want to be a new medium and be certified, you know, I'm one of the people that you have to go through to be certified to read in the camp. I believe what's happening is I love quantum physics. Love it. I can't do the math, but I can understand the principles that they're trying to show to us today. And what perhaps the old spiritualists used to call veils, you know, today we call dimensions.
Right.
And I think what happens is, you know, Michikaku, the Japanese scientist that is the voice of science today, you know, Carl Sagan died, and Stephen Hawking is in the wheelchair. So he's a quantum physicist among other degrees that he has, and he's kind of taken over as the face of science. Well, about 2 years ago, I was recording a television program for my students on parallel universes and other dimensions. And Michikaku said that they can prove mathematically that there are at least 11 different dimensions. Okay, the math proves there's 11 different dimensions. Now, he said, you know, as far back as late 1890s, we mathematically knew that we could split the atom, but we just didn't technologically know how we could do it. Then by the 1920s, the math showed there should be black holes in space, but there was no way that we could see them because any light was absorbed. Radar was absorbed. It wasn't until we had Hubble up there that we could see them. Well, the interesting thing I liked about what Michikaku said was they asked him, well, you know, how close do you think the next dimension is? And he said, it's closer to us than our clothes. Well, by the end of that year, they revised that and said, no, now we think that the next dimension may actually be a millimeter from us. And then just at the end of 2012 last year, they said that they now think that the next dimension is a trillionth of a trillionth of an inch from us. Okay? So that's quantum entanglement. Where am I drawing the energy from? It's spirit. It's the surviving consciousness of our loved ones or a trillionth of an inch from us. All we have to do is just by raising our vibrations through a little meditation and a little practice, a trillionth of an inch, and spirit lowers theirs, just that other half of that trillionth of an inch, and we meet for communication. Now, as the medium, I'm the one that focuses everybody's energy in the room towards that purpose. I'm the facilitator. That's the best word, I think, for a medium in a seance environment is I'm a facilitator. I'm not doing anything myself. I have the honor of being in the same room with all these wonderful people and their loved ones. And I have to admit, I will tell you that 40-something years, I've been doing this since I was 16 and a half years old. I'm a physical phenomena junkie. When some of this incredible stuff happens, I still have not lost my ability to be amazed at the things that spirit can do.
You love your job.
Well, it's not a job. That's what's so nice about it. You know, it's not a job. It's an expression, perhaps. You know, but it's an act of love. And seances can be very healing. A lot of healing takes place in seance. If anything, as a spiritualist, I believe that the ultimate form of physical phenomena, mediumship, is healing. It's instantaneous healing of conditions. There's the ultimate manifestation, the highest manifestation of that kind of energy. But to answer his question, all I'm doing is, with the help of the people in the room and with the help of the surviving consciousness, spirits, and guides and master teachers and master guides, whoever else want to come and work with us, we kind of make that little dimensional doorway easier access for them to come in and work. Now, for me, physically, it feels like I've been skin diving at about 400 feet. And then when we finish the seance, I spend the next hour or so decompressing. I sort of have to gently come up to a level, you know, so you don't get the bends, you don't, you know, nitrogen bubbles in your bloodstream, as the analogy, you don't get the bends. It takes you a little while to kind of come back to normal third dimensional, you know, energy.
That's amazing. That's one of those details that lets people know what's actually going on with this phenomenon. I wonder if you would tell us, you were telling me that you use some of the tools and artifacts that have been historically that used in the seance, and I thought, well, my gosh, I've never attended a seance where that was done. You know, that kind of a use of facilitation has ever happened. And I was wondering if you would explain a little bit about that.
Well, first of all, the word seance is just a French word, and it simply means sitting. Okay? Now, we have taken Hollyweird, you know, and put the Hollyweird to the word seance. Seance is, you know, sitting and talking. Hey, we're having a seance right now. We're sitting and talking. Except in my seance room, it's those that have departed and the other energies that we're trying to talk to. Now, the tools that are used in that environment, they were the original, if I can think of it, you know, something that you could get an answer. Today we have EMF meters, and we've got thermal imaging cameras, and we've got digital recorders and stuff that you can try to get real-time feedback. But before that, it was just common items that were used to try to get feedback. Now, what I do is I do a form, and it works best for those that don't sit together the longest, prolonged development, is I use a table. Table turning or table tipping goes all the way back to the Ottoman Empire. I did a seance for the History Channel. Myself and some other mediums, we did a seance in the seance room for a History Channel when they had the show Weird U.S. on.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, they appropriately called it the Weirdly Departed. But, you know, that was the tongue-in-cheek real big. But they traced it back to the Ottoman Empire. Now, I was able to trace table tipping back to the Sufi mystics. What happened was when the Knights Templar came to Jerusalem, they saw these Sufi mystics doing this thing with a table, and they asked them, what are you doing? And they just basically said, you know, we're talking to our loved ones. We're asking our guides and teachers for information and help. And they're answering us through the movements in the table, through raps, through taps, through other... the table speaks a language of its own. I know that Debbie can testify to this, that it'll even try to talk.
Mm-hmm.
In its movements, it'll make moans and groans and try to speak words. I mean, the table can do just a great number of things. But the table was the first instrument that was really used in modern spiritualism. Problem we had with the start of modern spiritualism was nobody knew what, you know, they could use to show people that this was real. Most folks in those days were farmers and clerks and blacksmiths, and you know that they weren't great theologians. Basically, all the spiritualist churches were out west, and back then, out west was Ohio and Pennsylvania and Missouri and Illinois and Wisconsin, and there were spiritualist churches in Georgia, Kentucky. That was where the spiritualist movement really was. We hear about the Fox sisters in New York State and Lilydale, but once that happened, it moved west. Well, these people just said, you know, basically, look, I'm from Missouri. You got to show me. I can't concentrate on what you're saying. You have to show me. Well, some of the members of the early spiritualist movement, you know, we were an aggregate. We had Masons. We had Rosicrucians. We had theophilosophical people. We had anti-slavery people. We had women's rights folks. We had all the great thinkers of their time gravitated to the spiritualist movement. Well, the Knights Templar, after Philip of France and the Pope tried to kill them off, they went underground and became the Masons. Well, we had Masons in the early spiritualist movement that said, look, you know, we know these stories from the Knights Templar of seeing this thing with a table. Let's try that and see if it worked. And they tried to use the table to bring spirit through, and boom, it worked just incredibly, you know, almost instantaneously. And that's where the use of table tipping in modern spiritualism came from. Now, you can use other things. You can use a trumpet, which, you know, you see kind of looks like the old cone that cheerleaders sort of used, but it was collapsible and made out of metal. In fact, most of them were made out of leftover roofing tin that they used to make their roofs with, tambourines, musical instruments. At a seance, there are stories of musical instruments being picked up and played, of I mean, there's just so many other things that can happen. It's just that the table is sort of the initial point of where things can start from.
An entry point, if you will, is sort of that interdimensional or multidimensional opening.
Well, that's a good way to look at it. I think of it in terms of, here's my table, and I have done 180 seances in a year. I can document and prove it. There were years there I was doing 130 to 150 seances a year on the average. Well, through constant use and repetition, the table would develop what science would call a morphic field in the table, in and around the table. It became charged with this energy that makes it easier for spirit to step into. If I am electromagnetic consciousness that survives the passing of my body, hey, my brain is just my modem, okay? Well,
yeah.
When I pass, I'm the program, my brain is my modem, and if I can use the latest technology, then I just get uploaded to the cloud. Okay.
Yes, I see what you're doing. You're diagramming, yeah.
Well, the table then becomes a place that you can bring your consciousness back down to a third dimensional level, and the table will reflect your state of consciousness, and your it answers yes/no questions. It can, I mean, it there's so many other things that it can do that people don't realize. They just think, oh, it might turn a little or this or that. But the table speaks a language like sign language. And table tipping, the use of the table evolved. One of my favorites is Emma Hartage Britton. You know about Emma, right?
Uh-huh.
You know, she's considered to be the as much as people consider George Colby or Andrew Jackson Davis or somebody to be the father of modern spiritualism, Emma Hartage Britton is considered to be the mother of modern spiritualism. She was from a well-to-do family in England. She heard about spiritualism here in the United States. She was a theosophist. She studied Rosicrucianists. She studied a lot of different philosophies and decided to come to America to see what was happening here. And after an intense study, the one thing that she really liked was table tipping, the use of the table. And it's not the table evolves through use, through your mediumship. As your mediumship grows, the table's ability to express and draw energy as well increases. Well, she took table tipping to England, where it took off. People just loved it because it was something that everyone could do in their parlor, you know, basically, and get real-time answers. And table tipping went from there to France. And it was actually such a rage in France that people would stop each other on the street and they weren't asking, hey, who won The Voice last night or you know, whatever the reality show was. They'd ask each other, what information are you getting from your table? How's your table reacting? What is it doing? So that, you know, that speaks volumes for how well the table was able to work with the average person. You didn't need to be a highly trained medium to use this. It was a very good starting point for developing your mediumship.
Gotcha. When folks gather around the table, and do you get a lot of requests for, can you specifically, do people say to you, will you contact my mother who crossed, or my brother who crossed? Is that sort of standard with what you do, or do you explain before the seance begins that you were going to be open and that spirit will come if you have a silent request to make it? How does it go, Victor?
Well, I always say that you should. We make it a point that if you contact us and say you want to do a seance, then we'll have you go to our website and read, you know, what I have written for to give you a background. Of course, my website's www.casavegamedium.com, and we have videos on there from I've done seances with Jeffrey Kaufman from Nightline, Travel Channel, The Today Show, and
mm-hmm.
people can see physically. And you know, it's just a little bit. You know, they weren't doing the whole show on just me. They were doing it on the camp, but we had come and let them see this so that they can see what may happen in that environment. The table is not the only thing that can happen. It's just a starting point. We have phenomena of a paranormal nature, if you want to use those kind of terms, of all other kinds in the seance room. The table's just a start. But we tell people, for instance, spirit decides who comes in first. Okay? You know, it is very egocentric of us to think that somebody's going to come because we're calling them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my mother, God bless her, she still comes in, and, you know, sometimes she'll come in such a manner that my students know my own mother's energy when she comes in the room, and they're going like, Victor, what did you do? You know, your mother's here, Victor. What did you do? You know, so they decide who comes in first. All right, because you may have a problem that needs resolving, or you may need to receive information that's going to be for your highest and best. The spirit decides who comes in first. And then perhaps the person that you invited comes in next. It's very important to show love and respect for the departed. I will always say that I show as much love and respect for the departed as I do the living. When I was stationed in Europe, I went to some paranormal investigations. And when they go to a house, you know, they'll knock on the door and the owner of the house will come. But before they set a foot in the house, they'll ask the spirit, excuse me, do you mind if I come in? Is it okay? You know, I just want to talk. Is it all right if I come in? If you don't want us, just give us a sign and we'll leave. You know, because I wouldn't want to be sitting on my couch eating Doritos, watching television, and have you blow through my front door and start screaming at me and waving all sorts of equipment around the room and everything else and then expect me to want to talk to you.
That's very Hollywood, Victor.
You know,
it sells tickets to movies.
You know, that's not how it's done.
I know.
Now, I have had people come to say, look, we'd like a seance, and I just want to reach my brother. I don't want to reach anyone else. Okay? Just him. You know, when I'll say, okay, we'll try. And then we'll do everything that we can to sympathetically bring his energy in. Some people bring in pictures. They'll bring in something that belonged to them. They had a great sentimental attachment. We'll sit and sing songs that were their favorite songs. And, I mean, we've sung everything from Elvis Presley to show tunes to Three Dog Night to, you know, I can't tell you, military songs, because it's sympathetic rhythm, and we're calling them back with energy that they loved, you know, so that they can hear us and come and be here.
Victor,
so
can I interrupt you for 1 minute? I have a question, and I think a lot of people would like to know what your opinion is of this. In the
sure.
day, because you're explaining this, and I understand exactly what you're saying, And I'm wondering, when people are bothered or busied by a song coming into their head that they simply can't get rid of, is that the presence of someone multidimensional, you know, spirit coming in and trying to reach out, and so the song is placed there to capture our attention?
Sometimes. Not all the time.
Not always.
But sometimes. Yeah. I also study neural pathology. I'm a frustrated brain surgeon, you know. You better, you know, if you come around the house and I got the tools laying out, you know, you might watch out.
I know somebody who collects antique surgical instruments. It's not as strange, I guess, as I once thought.
Oh, he has a puppy brain.
Well, my wife teaches Silva Mind Sciences, which is a form of mental programming for improving on everything from how to work with your habit controls to even working with your intuition and things of that nature as well.
Uh-huh.
So that song can be something that just got stuck in a loop, or it could be them doing that. Now, they'll try a lot of different ways to get to reach you. That just doesn't have to be the only thing, but if it's something that has meaning to you, then yes, it could be.
And for myself, I often will all of a sudden hear a song that my mother used to sing, type of thing. It'll come into my head. I haven't been thinking of her at all. It'll come into my head. And I do realize that she's somewhere, you know, nearby, if you will. But I was wondering about the songs that just pop in there. And I've always thought to myself, well, who is this that's dropping by?
Well, you know, it can be, or, of course, as we start to reach my point of life, perhaps one brain cell just popped and let loose a stored memory there. Who knows what bubbles up from our unconscious, you know.
Oh, there with you later.
You know, it could be some lost memory from the 70s that I, of some experience that I was not conscious enough at the time, or way too conscious at the time to recall.
David asks, is it a brain fart? And I think he might have.
they can be that too. I think what if they're trying to get your attention,
they will.
They'll depending upon the urgency of what they're why they're trying to get your attention will warrant the amount of attempt and contact. If I remember a song. My mom loved Mac the Knife. Okay, so if I hear Bobby Darin or Louis Armstrong playing Mac the Knife on the radio all of a sudden, then what I'll do is afterwards I'll stop and then say, okay, what is it? You know, is this a fond memory? You know, you just want to say, hi, everything's okay? Or is there a reason that you're trying to get my attention?
Then
I'm going to stop for a minute then and sit down and listen. We don't listen. We want spirit to talk like crazy to us, but we don't listen. And you know, you hate to talk to a person that isn't going to listen to you.
Quite true.
They're still the same personality. So when I always say, you look for the context with a phenomena. All right. If we're sitting in the living room and we're talking and we hear some bangs are scratching in the walls or sounds like something in the attic, and we're not talking about spirits, we're not talking about loved ones, then I think maybe I'll call the exterminator out to see if I got a raccoon in the attic or something. But if I'm in a seance and I'm getting bangs in the walls and, you know, stuff, all sorts of other noises, then, hey, you know what, I just asked spirit, can you tell me, is, you know, is this true or not? Is this yes or no? Or is this something that's going to happen? Then there's a context to the phenomena. If your lights are flickering, you know, and you just happen to have been talking about something, spirit will try to reach you physically. If you're accustomed to working in a physical environment and you're aware of the physical events around you, they'll try to give you confirmation, like maybe the lights flicker, the radio suddenly comes on. Now, when the radio comes on and that song is on that we're discussing, then that's really somebody trying to get your attention. But they'll try to let you know that, yes, I'm agreeing with what you're saying, with what you're thinking, you know, with what you want to do. They tend to use positive reinforcement far much more than oh my God, don't do that, something terrible is going to happen. Spirit doesn't like to work that way. They don't want to scare you. They love you. Hey, you know, why would I want to scare somebody that I loved? Instead, more attempts at communication are made to confirm things than warnings.
So what if you have someone or something around you that is scaring you? I have a friend that has a few spirits in the house that are cool, and a couple that really do some really funky things and give a really weird feeling.
Well, I always tell everybody, in a nutshell, we are the ones that are in charge of the third dimension. We're third dimensional. Actually, I think I can pretty much prove we live in at least five dimensions.
There you go.
Just tell them. you just tell them, hey, cut it out. You know, look, I'm the one that's in charge here. Now, if you want to come and go by here, all right. But if you start getting too discourteous about it, then I'm going to have to seek a method for to get you to move on. You know, it's like a house. You know what the number one thing that sets off a so-called haunting in a house is?
What would that be, Victor?
I said, do you know what the number one thing that sets off activity in a house is?
What would that be?
Some people use the term haunting.
Mm-hmm. Oh, tell us.
Oh. Renovation.
Renovation. Wow.
Renovation.
Yes, disturbing the space, reconstructing. Yeah.
That's right. Your wood, the floors, the plumbing, the wiring, it all holds the energy from the persons previously that lived there. So what it is the equivalent of just hitting a big old gong, clong, and then that energy vibrates back out into the house, and then after a while it'll settle back down. Now, if the previous owner of the house still happens to be there, and perhaps fuchsia isn't their favorite color, they might make an attempt to try to talk to you.
It's like asking the kitty cat to take a piddle on the pillow.
You know, and then at that point, you have to talk to them and say, look, what space would you like to have? And I'll be respectful and allow you a little elbow room, and you let me have elbow room because I'm the one that owns this place now. Otherwise, you know, if we can't get along, one of us is going to have to go, and it's not going to be me.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a form of cooperation and respect, and when that isn't observed, you move on to just cleansing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And believe it or not, a lot of, why do spirits come to us in the seance? Or why do spirits even want to stay around us? It's because they draw a vicarious sense of life from watching the family continue.
Mm.
Okay? First of all, there's no time on the other side. It's all just one moment to them. If you're one of my students, I make you study Japanese Zazen because it teaches you to be here now. Okay, be here in the moment. Now they, since there is no time, they just stay and watch the family. I won't say a dispassionate observer, but they're not attached to the time. It's not like, oh, well, she hurry up and grow up so that I can get out of here and go do what I want to do. No, instead, they hang around to watch the family grow, to see the grandkids, to see how people have developed. If you do have problems of some kind, they'll try to step in and help you. It's more like if you can make the framework for the correction that you want in your life, then they'll do everything that they can to bring the skin to the building. You know, they'll bring all the energy you need. They'll try to get it and help you connect to it from their side. That makes sense?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. In other words, you're saying that, you know, like I realized a long while ago that my grandmother has always been one of my guides or guardians, if you will. She's there to help me face the challenges that I come up to. And it's like a deal she made when she crossed to be here for me because there's a connection.
Well, that's also very observant of you. Actually, the first guides that we have, if you start off on any sort of metaphysical or energetic journey, tend to be our loved ones.
Yeah.
Our mothers, our fathers, our grandparents, brothers, sisters, uncles. Why? Because they're the ones that knew us the best. They knew us when we were alive. They know how we think. They know how we're going to react to a particular given situation. They know how to show things to us in a manner that perhaps we'll understand it. People got so fixated on guides after the problems of fraudulent mediums in the 30s, 20s and 30s, that we lost contact with our loved ones, and people got guide fixated. And that guide fixation stayed around till almost the 70s. Some Indian chief or guy with a turban, you know, is not necessarily going to be your first guide. Your first guide is going to be the person that helps you take the first steps.
Yes.
Understand?
Yeah.
Victor, we're at the top of the hour again, and we have another 30 minutes where wanted to invite anyone listening who has a question for you to give a call in. And are you okay with that, speaking with some of our listeners? And at this moment, I'd like to take a moment to just do a little bit of a little ad work here. The Consciousness Shift is sponsored by the I Love Nicole Show on YouTube with Nicole Tomasini, and also tune in on Monday evenings to Spirit Therapy right here on Here Be Monsters with Nicole Tomasini. I guess that's going to be at 7 p.m., Nick?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and I'm not sure, is that starting next week or the week after, or?
Let's see. Let's see what happens.
Okay, we'll just keep an eye out for it. And as always, we are sponsored by DaughtersOfIsis.com, the fragrant memories of our ancestors. Get on over there and check us out. We have essential oil blends, and everything is based in culture, the spiritual expressions of the different cultures across the planet. Okay, so Victor, I'm going to invite anyone at this point to call in who has a question or would like to speak with you, and we'll just continue on with with our conversation here. This is wonderful stuff. It gives people an idea of especially what you're doing up there in Casadega, and connecting beyond this conscious awareness into an awareness that I think is quite possible for us to all consciously hold right now. It just takes a little bit of practice and work. And one of the tools, I think, is being able to attend the phenomenal events like seances that when you're in a room with all that kind of energy, it tends to turn people on or turn up the frequency on their own inner antenna, if you will, to connect with spirit.
Well, all your clairs immediately go to work in a seance environment. From clairsentiency, audiency, gustancy, they all come to work. But the thing I like about a seance is it's a very sensual experience. It requires that you use your senses of feeling and smelling and touching, because your loved ones, if things happen properly, we all know what our loved ones' energies feel like. You know what our mothers, our fathers, our husbands, wives, significant partners, we know what their energies feel like, and when they're gone, we feel that absence. That's grief. You know, that's neural programming. Well, when they step into the seance environment, I've had people where the table has just moved very gently toward them, and before it even got to them, they were just in tears because they were so embraced by the energy of their loved one that there was no doubt that that's who it was that was coming in to be there with them. All the table does is, you know, I'll never forget, I had a young girl, she couldn't be much more than 20, 21. She was saying, "I can't believe I'm talking to a table." But she wasn't talking to the table. The table was just reflecting the consciousness of the person that she was talking to. It was giving her the feedback.
Victor, I want to invite my sister to explain to the listeners just a little bit about being one of the folks who attended and how she experienced it, just exactly what you're talking about right now, Deb.
I just wanted to talk. I don't know if you remember this, Victor, but when my friend Jessica's mom came, we all smelled her, except Jessica. Her mother was there, and her mother was there through the whole weekend. Her perfume did not leave our room all weekend. It was crazy. But what you talk about, how you know the energy of the loved one is there, I'm the one who like bawled like a baby because I just knew it was mom, and how the table hugs you, that experience,
yeah,
of how it rubs up against you ever so gently. And I have to tell people who are listening, this table is not only big, but it is heavy. And I mean seriously heavy table. And it just moves in this most gentle way. And what Victor explained to us is hugging. The spirit will hug you. And the table just moved towards me and just rubbed on my belly in the most gentlest way. And like you were sharing about how it tries to speak and talk and give messages, I remember that I had asked a particular question or something. I don't remember the question, but I remember the response. The table kind of clattered to me, was like laughing or dancing. And it just reminded me of my mom. I just, especially in the point where I had mentioned someone and the table stopped and moved a little and we all started laughing, and I just knew it was mom. That instant confirmation was like right there. But I have to say, it's an experience that everyone should have. I think everyone needs to go see you and have a seance, because it was amazing the way the table would move so fast and then gently slow and tip so high, or when the energy came out for healing like it did, and you couldn't move that table for anything. I remember when you said that the table was, you couldn't move it. And I was like, okay, I'm going to try to move this table. And I couldn't, I couldn't push on it. I couldn't lift it. It was like it was bolted to the floor. Spirit was just using it to give the, to guide the healing energy into my girlfriend who was sitting next to me. And I found that quite amazing. And you were talking, you and my sister were talking about the trumpets that you have and the children, how they play with them and how that happened with all the trumpets on the back table, how they faded and moved a little bit. And the pyramid, the stone above you that was lit up, how it flickered on and off. In a playful way was more confirmation of the spirits being there. It was quite amazing, and that energy that you were talking about that the table acquires, and you could feel it. I felt it. We all did, because you had mentioned it to us if we had felt it, and you could just feel it, like it was like the table became pliable under your fingers. It was the most interesting sensation I've ever felt. So I just wanted to share that.
Well, you know, from my aspect as a medium, the hug. We call this, our British friends call it cuddles. Our British mediums, when they come, you know, they call it cuddles. But from my aspect as a medium, if you were inside this morphic field that's there at the table, and you're trying to feel the person one last time from their side, you know, then I'm trying to get to hold you. I'm trying to get my energy field around you to feel you and hug you one more time. And the table is kind of in between that, you know, it's the media field between the two subjects. So they express that by the movement of the table. I always say that the first thing the table expresses is the emotional state of the spirit that's coming through. And I think you found that that was true in the way the different people were approached by their loved ones, whether they were worried that they might scare them, so they gently approached them, or someone who you knew it was, and they just came over like gangbusters and almost knocked them out of the chair.
Yeah. That is true. And when it moved and very quickly around in the room, and then when it would just stop and spirit would focus on the one person, and it would gently move over there to them, and or it would tilt like it did, and everybody would get cold except the one person who was getting the energy, hence me, who was sweating. Or my girlfriend sitting next to me, she was like ice cold. Her hands were freezing. And it was just so interesting with how it did move and how it grown and how it spoke, so to speak, just one of us.
I'd like to mention at this point, for anyone listening who's interested, you can go over to Victor's page online. And Victor, please, after I finish, give him your website.
The web page.
Yeah, address. You can go over there and you can find some really interesting videos that, as Victor said, from the History Channel, from the Today Show, but they're really wonderful short video clips that give you a real-time idea of how he works with the table, or how spirit works with the table and what's done. And it's very plain. It's very plain.
One of the interesting things that happened, and I know Deb can tell you, is that when you're in that field working, for one thing, you're out of normal space and time. Mm-hmm. When we finished, we had been downstairs 2 hours. Or more, and didn't even realize it.
No.
You're out of the normal flow of time.
Yeah, it seems like it goes so fast.
You're looking. you look and realize that we've had times where spirit after spirit came through, and their raps and their taps and their bangs, and there's all kinds of ectoplasm, and we figured, my God, we must have been down here 3 hours, and we've barely been down there an hour. And then there are other times that spirit comes in, and it's just one or two, three things, and the energy stops, and then we look up, and we've been down there 3 hours.
Amazing.
True.
That's time disappearing on you. It's time tricking you, if you will. I used to spend time in a dark room, and I can understand it's stepping into another world. You're quite right about that.
Well, I just wanted to say the website is Seance. That's S-E. Excuse me, it's Casadega Medium? Yes, CasadegaMedium.com, and that's the one with the videos, right, dear? Yeah, that's the one with the videos, and if anyone's interested in wanting to have a seance, please let us know, because you don't know how long the opportunity to do seances is going to last. It's a very interesting thing. I talked to one of my Australian mediums, David Thompson, we know. Actually, physical phenomena mediumship came back in to phase in the late 1999, early 2000s. And as Emma said, she saw mediumship in three or four phases. One, the first was all physical phenomena. The second was mental mediumship, and a lot of that was learning to work more closely with spirit, more effectively. That's where you had a lot of automatic writing. You had a lot of trance work, as it was. But then the next stage of mediumship was the average person became the medium. Now today, with all the technology that we have, you can pretty much be your own technological medium.
Explain.
But it still doesn't have the personal quality that the seance environment gives you. That's the one reason I do it, is that you, and Deb will tell you, you just know it's real. I can sit and give you a message from a loved one, and that's like, from my aspect, mental mediumship is like trying to play Chinese whispers in a foreign language. You know, it's as hard out for them to talk to us as it is for us to try to talk to them and then relay the message to you. Here in the seance environment, they're coming directly. There's no middleman. They're here talking to you, and they're using different methods to respond.
Victor, can you explain a little bit more about the electronic and virtual and technical mediumship that's going on right now? I think people would be interested, and I know, you know, the EVP and that kind of. Can you touch on some of that for folks? Explain.
Well, sure. I've got, my wife lovingly calls them the boy toys. You know, for instance, you could get apps for your phone now.
Oh, yeah.
Because your phone is not a phone. It's a processor.
Yeah.
Remember that. It's not a phone anymore. It's a computer.
We
did. And you can get the Ghost radar.
Mm-hmm.
And it will literally show you where the energy is in the room, how strong it is, and it has a vocabulary. The Ghost Radar, the updated version, you can actually, it's got something like a 3,000-word vocabulary, and you can remove words and put your own language into that vocabulary if you want. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, we did that. We did the orb walk the other night, and some of the girls downloaded that app on their phone, and it is the most coolest thing. You can buy the app or get it for free, and it was so neat. It's like a radar, like you said, and spirit shows on it. And if spirit speaks, the words will come out. It was quite neat.
What kind of okay, thank you, David. David has posted a link in the chat room for apps. I feel a little, my jaw dropped, Victor, as you were saying this, because I'm like, what? You know,
this is a.
I thought I had all the stuff. I guess I don't.
iPhone App Store or Google, I believe. Play Store, Esther says they have them for your phone. But you can also get the cameras now, for instance. Although, I believe, you know, Deb can tell you, in a seance room, you can see orbs without a camera. You can see that sometimes there'll be amorphous balls of light as big as people in the room. Sometimes it looks like it's snowing where there's fractured spirit light that's trying to pull itself together. You don't need just a camera to see and experience these things, but they have cameras now that not only see in the full color spectrum from ultraviolet to infrared, but they're cameras now that can see into the electromagnetic spectrum and show a visualization of what's happening electromagnetically.
Yes, it's exciting.
So you can, but I'm going to tell you something that's very unusual. Our spirits, most of them, don't like the equipment. I'll put the we've tried to use the K2 meters and trifield meters, and we've put in motion sensor detectors in the back of the room and different things. And they won't come around them. Nope, they don't like it. They say they'd rather use us than the equipment. Because spirit borrows energy from every one of the sitters, as well as the medium, blends it all together into a form that can be used as a circle. And then when it's over, they return that energy to each person that's there, except it's a higher energy. It's a more refined energy. I always tell everybody after a seance, you know, you're going to go back and sleep like a rock because your body has just got kind of a spiritual download, if you can think of it in those terms, by borrowing your energy and returning it.
So you're saying that spirit, in your experience, Victor, spirit is not so pleased by the electronic gewgaws. They are more pleased when you're developing the instrument of yourself, your own sensuality, your own brain, your own ability to pick up the information. That's what they respond to.
Well, at least in my environment, they do. You know,
okay.
In our place.
That makes a difference, and it's an important thing to say, I think. Yeah.
Now, if you're going somewhere where, I always say the best paranormal groups have a medium or so with them, because the energy that's there immediately recognizes that you can see and sense them.
Oh, yeah.
And they'll step forward a lot easier than just coming in and then you're trying all this, you know, everything from trigger objects to, you know, provocation to get them to talk. In the seance room, I don't have to. We're there. We invited you. You know, please come. And, you know, and before each seance, I'm going to tell you, I don't do it. Okay? None of what happens is Victor. All right, I'm a guide. All right, you know, your safety and security are my first concern. you know, one, you're in a darkened environment, so I don't want you getting up, walking around, and falling over something. Second, I don't want the table, through the enthusiasm of the persons coming through to see you, to, you know, physically injure you, because that table can levitate. Deb will tell you, we show you, we got scratches on the ceiling where that table floated straight up and spun around on the ceiling in the room. So it's the enthusiasm of the spirit and their energy and development that happens. But there, we've invited them. We said, please,
right,
you know, come talk to me. And I'll sit there for about 10, 15 minutes before the custom, you know, for our sitters come. And I'll talk to spirits, you know, and basically I'm saying, please, you know, please come. You know, there are people that want to talk to you. There are people that have expectations or people that need healing, you know, I always laughingly say I'm not too proud to beg, you know. I'll beg them, you know, please come and help the people that, you know, want to be here. And I find that works the best.
I have to say that I had one of my Native American teachers used to say the best, the simplest, and the best way to work with guides or spirit at all is to be honest and kind, because that's what they respond to. Kind.
You know, my intent is to communicate with you, and my attitude is with love and respect. I show as much love and respect for the living as I do. I show as much love and respect for the departed as I do for the living. And
yeah.
I always laughingly say I've had a lot less problems from the departed than I've had from the living.
Ain't it the truth? Victor, has been a wonderful show. Go ahead, Nick. I'm sorry.
Just real quick, I know we have just a few minutes left, but can you talk to us a little bit about, like, what kind of conversations, like, come up?
Okay. It can be people come with their own agendas. I've had people come with a tablet with questions written down that they wanted answers on.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And 25 people she wanted answers from.
Wow.
But it could be anything as simple as, you know, what do I do with your stuff now that you're departed? You know, I don't want to upset you. Or look, I'd like to sell the house. You know, I don't need this big house anymore. Or are you going to be upset if I sell it? And spirit will always, they'll generally say, look, you know, I'm here on the other side. I don't need a house. The Bible says in my Father's house there's many mansions. And what that means is you go to a place where they think one of these 11 dimensions may be pure energy. Well, if it's pure energy and you are electromagnetic energy that survives, when you step into that dimension, then it's just as real as we are here now in our world, except the environment responds to your thinking. So whatever sort of house you ever wanted to live in, boom, there it is. We always like Meryl Streep in Defending Your Life. Have you ever seen that film?
Yeah.
With Albert Brooks, where her idea of heaven is she sits there eating 3 pounds of pasta all the time through the movie and never gaining an ounce of weight.
It's a wonderful movie, Robert Brooks. It's a wonderful movie.
That's one of her ideas of heaven. So everybody's got their own kind of heaven. We've had specific questions. I had a lady come in one time and basically said, where's the, you know, insurance policy? If I can't find it, you know, they're getting ready to evict me out of the house. And we, my job a lot of times as the medium is I'll try to finish the sentence for spirit. They'll start the conversation, and sometimes it gets a little, if it's a little too complicated for yes or no or for movement in the table, for other things in the environment, we have to phase phrase the questions ourselves sometimes so that spirit can answer them. If not, then I'll sort of step back a little and let them give me the image of what they want to finish saying. And in the case of this lady, you know, I said, okay, it's in the chest of drawers. And she said, no, it isn't. I took all the drawers out, and I didn't see it. And I said, no, it's taped up under the top where the drawer opens. He didn't stick it in the back or on the drawer. He taped it up on the top under the drawer. And a day or so later, I got a phone call back from this woman saying, yep, that's where it was.
Wow.
Now she's, you know, she didn't lose her house. Everything else was okay for her. So the topic of conversation could be mundane things forgiveness. Forgiveness is one of the number one reasons spirit and people communicate. And it might be something as simple as, let's say I was a very physically active person when I was alive, and now just before I departed, I was, pretty crippled up, and I was it took a lot to take care of me. I was grumpy because here I've been so active and now I'm not, and I was nasty to you. So when I come back in, I want to say, you know, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to lose my temper. I didn't mean to be that way to you. And a lot of times when you say, you know, that's okay, I understand, I forgive you, we have heard in the air in the room, it's called direct voice. Sometimes we've heard, just like something was lifted off someone's shoulders. In the seance room. So forgiveness can be a reason for conversation. A lot of times they just want you to know that they're okay and stop worrying about me. They're worried more about you. Too many people I've seen nearly grieve themselves to death. And spirit comes in and says, look, you're the one that's still here in the third dimension. You better get a grip on it. I don't want you coming over here on my account.
You know, Vic, that's really it. We are down to it, guys. The show is got like 2 minutes. I think that the topic of forgiveness is just a wonderful place to pause. I think forgiveness is probably the one thing that will help us as a species get down the road right now. You know, because that's what heals the heart. That's one of the most important things we can learn in our lives, I think, forgiveness. Anyways,
well, I always say it's about love and forgiveness.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Kindness helps, too. I want to remember to say, before we get off the air here, and we're getting real close to it, I want to thank Esther, Victor's wife, for coming in and speaking in the chat under his name with us tonight. I also want to thank David and Kim and Michael Q for stopping by. Michael, it's so good to see you, dude. And all the other people that are listening in. Thank you so much. And we are at the end. Now, you can find Victor's website. We posted it in chat room. And please, check him out. And if you're going to Casadega, you should stop by. My sister and all the girls said it was just a really well spent, I guess it was an afternoon, evening. And
I want to thank you for having me. You know, before you leave, I, you know, express my gratitude and thanks for having me this evening.
Oh, it was a pleasure, and I hope you'll come back and spend time with us again.
Anytime.
Okay.
Just a phone call away.
Okay.
Yeah, great stuff. Thank you so much, Victor. And thank you, Glenn, for always getting such great people over here. And Debbie for the experience, everything.
Oh, you're welcome. It was good talking with you, Victor.
My pleasure.
And that is tonight's show. I want to thank everybody who's listening in the archive. And don't forget to go over and visit Victor's site. There's a lot of interesting stuff there. Give him a ring. And that's all she wrote for this evening. We will see you. Don't forget, July 11th, Danny and Brinkley, the original near-death experience there, will be with us. So don't forget to listen in. All righty. That's it for this evening. Thank you, folks.
Well,